Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listeners, and welcome to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight's story leads us into gilded halls where art is not only admired, but obeyed. You've heard that art imitates life, but what if the brushstrokes don't just reflect reality, they rewrite it? Tonight, we step inside a private estate filled with priceless masterpieces and impossible performances where beauty is pain, and being seen might just be the most dangerous desire of all. Because when the gallery watches back, you better hope it likes what it sees. If our stories scratch at your nerves and leave you thinking twice about that reflection in the dark, help us keep the horror alive. Leave a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening. Watching on YouTube? Like, comment, and subscribe. And hit that bell icon so you never miss a scream. Craving more? Visit us at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com. For just $7.99 a month or even less with an annual plan, you'll get early access to new episodes, ad-free listening, and exclusive content we reserve for our most fearless fans. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X, where it's always just a few minutes past midnight. Now, fix your gaze, steady your breath, and step inside the gallery. Tonight's tale comes to us from Christian Wallace, a name you'll recognize if you've wandered the darker corners of horror fiction. His stories twist beauty and brutality together, revealing the hunger beneath elegance and the cost of being admired. This one's no exception. It's a tale of obsession, transformation, and occult performance, where the stage is gilded, the audience is silent, and every performer is one breath away from becoming part of the exhibit. It's a story about what we'll endure to be seen, and what answers when we ask for attention. Narrated by Beth Gato, and featuring Otis Gyrie, Katie Auden, Miles Catania, and Kyle Barbary, this is one show you'll never forget, no matter how hard you try. So adjust your costume, take your place on stage, and enjoy A Private Exhibition by Christian Wallace.
She looks like you.
The old man nodded towards the painting, one of many that adorned the halls of his stately home. It showed a young woman being flayed from the hips down, her skin trailing behind her like a cloak as she carved a path through a crowd of desperate peasants. She looked peaceful, content with basking in the people's admiration, even as they peeled the skin from her legs with notched blades and scalpels. "It's odd," was all I managed to say. Mr. Brinshaw smiled like an amused father. I'd expected him to be some trust fund creep after reading about the job, with slicked back hair the color of straw and teeth too big for his gums. But when I met him, I was surprised to see that he was quiet and dignified, even a little affectionate. Somehow, he was all the scarier for it.
The artist was very close to my heart,
he said.
I was his patron. But it can be hard for people to get what they want, especially money. I thought I was saving him. He died before the millennium, twisted all out of shape on some hospital bed, begging for more drugs.
I'm sorry to hear that, I said.
Don't be,
he replied.
He wrote some remarkable poetry. Revolutionary stuff that would have introduced us to a new age of spiritualism if he hadn't burnt most of it. He also gave me this painting, and in doing so, he led me to you.
You mean?
Jensen brought it to my attention.
He was referring to the strange-looking assistant who'd petitioned me at my door 3 weeks before.
He was the one who brought your application to me. I took the resemblance between you and the painting as a sign.
I thought that you had hired me for my experience as a professional.
We have all those types here already. The educated and the qualified,
he said.
But it's not always about qualifications or even talent. Sometimes I simply like to give people a chance at getting what they want.
Like your artist? I asked. He got what he wanted? The old man smiled again, and this time it wasn't so fatherly.
I suppose that's up to you.
We were expected to wake at 5 a.m. and spend the day preparing. Costume fittings, practice runs, more costume fittings, more practice runs. Hours and hours spent sitting still, standing still, posing, smiling, crying, purring, roaring, growling. I was sexy, vulnerable, dignified, angry, fierce, quiet, cold, warm, hot. By the end of the first day, just as the sun began to set on the shores of the private island, I was exhausted and ready to collapse. Only the show hadn't even begun yet. I'd known we weren't alone, if only because the other performers never shut up about catching glimpses of Prince so-and-so, or Senator this, or Baron that. Each night, we would be displayed for whatever wealthy guests Mr. Brinshaw could fly in. But I had to shut that out. I just had to. I couldn't think of princes and oligarchs, of people with the power to change my life, to raise it up out of the dirt, or to stamp it into nothing if the feeling came to them. I couldn't even think of the people next to me, lithe and tall and hauntingly beautiful. The other performers gossiped endlessly and wore the day's stresses with effortless grace. They were professionals, not like me, but instead like the people I had aspired to be when I was younger. They were performers, dancers, and models, human clay to be turned into works of art that inspired and enlightened. There were photos of them in galleries worth more than my entire life's possessions. For our first piece, we were dressed in graduation gowns. Only instead of caps, we wore old-school military helmets. They were spiky-looking German things that I'm sure made some commentary on violence or education or something else. I can't say exactly what because the artist who organized it would not talk to me, would not even look at me. I listened, but did not speak, for 12 hours until the moment finally came, and we were herded onto a stage where I was told to stand in the corner and look forlorn. There were 13 of us set in various places around a central podium. A young woman, easily 6'3", with the frame of a Victorian ghost, was then guided to her place at the focus of the piece. She tried not to smile as she climbed the steps, but her eyes alighted on me for the briefest of moments, and I felt her smug superiority overwhelm me. I began to shake, to flush hot with sweat and embarrassment. But before I had the time to compose myself, the room suddenly burst into a frantic alarm, and every black-shirted assistant, choreographer, and costume designer fled into the distant corners of the room, disappearing behind secret doors. Only the artist remained, and he made some final adjustments before the guests arrived.
Catherine,
he said, and God, if I haven't heard that exact phrasing of my name 1,000 times before.
Catherine, darling, can you just scooch down just a little?
I bent my knees ever so slightly, getting a face full of a young man's back. I was effectively hidden behind him.
Brilliant,
the artist said and clapped his hands. And then the guests poured in. I stepped down from the podium, gold paint flaking from my armpit and crotch. It was the third week, the 21st show. Each day, we spent 6 long hours posing or performing like we were taking part in a ritual. No 2 shows were alike, and every day brought strange new instructions. Today's task was to remain perfectly still. I was exhausted, shivering and drained from the sheer physical exertion of holding a pose for so ridiculously long. Ilana floated past me, a full head taller than I, not even looking down as she hurried on toward the adoring artist. Other dancers broke away from their conversations and surged out to greet her, and a timid-looking man, whom I knew to be a guest, lingered awkwardly, waiting to make her acquaintance. His movies dominated the box office every year, but he fidgeted nervously like a chubby teenager at Comic-Con. She was painted silver, but on her it looked platinum. The rest of us were like shabby copper figurines in comparison. This was our first nude show, and I didn't feel like sticking around with all of the others who seemed so comfortable in their own skin. So I hurried from the stage and made my way to one of the corner exits.
Oh, Ilana.
I turned to catch Mr. Brinshaw, flanked by the lanky Jensen. He shuffled up to the precious metal debutante and took one of her hands in his. His eyes looked at her with pure admiration, like she was his favorite daughter and mistress rolled into one. Whatever he said to her, I couldn't make it out, but it looked like a secret shared between 2 lovers. It hurt to see him talk to her like that. It was childish and stupid of me. I knew it even then, but it still hurt like hell. I looked down at my legs and saw the paint flaking away, and I felt so irritated that it would do that for me, but not for the others. I got ready to hurry back to the changing rooms only for my attention to be caught by Mr. Brinshaw. He was talking and laughing, and he had swept his eyes across the crowd in a way that I mistook for his turning in my direction. Only his eyes didn't stop to linger, not even for a second. He simply did not see me.
Not looking for Prince Charming?
It was Jensen, smiling awkwardly as he sat beside me on the step where I smoked. We were behind one of the many kitchens that opened onto a gravel-filled bit of yard. Big houses, really big houses. I knew they often had little openings like this. It let natural light fill rooms deep in the center of the building.
A lot of the models have been gagging to meet the guests outside of the performance. Mr. Brinshaw finally relented.
He added. For Ilana? I asked. Jensen smirked. I think he was trying to be sympathetic, but it didn't seem that way. Didn't realize he'd be coming all this way to be hidden at the back, I added. It's been 3 weeks, and ever since the first, I've been out of sight the entire time.
You're trying your best,
he said with a limp shrug. Do I stand out that badly? He laughed.
It's a weird job,
he replied.
Mr. Brinshaw likes the arts. He always has. But he's fickle. He won't have Ilana at the center every time. I'm sure there'll be some opportunities to be up there.
I'm not some teenage girl in need of approval, I told him. Why don't you get up there and flash the CEO of GE your balls if it's so easy?
Oh, God, no.
He laughed.
I couldn't get up there and do what you guys do. There isn't a single mature hairline up there.
I don't know if he realized it, but he rubbed his hand across his head as he spoke.
For what it's worth,
he said,
one of the guests left this for you.
He handed me a small card, my name written on one side in flourishing cursive. You are a force to be reckoned with, it read. Shine brightly. Mr. Brinshaw? I asked.
It's not his writing,
he replied.
but someone saw you up there and liked you. I know you feel a little out of your league, but you're not hopelessly outclassed. We hired you for a reason. Just keep at it.
That night, I could not sleep, so I decided to take my restlessness and exercise it with a little walk around the house. Most of it was open to us, and in one of our first meetings, Mr. Brinshaw encouraged us to roam the halls and galleries so that we could take inspiration from his private collection. Most of it was a little mundane, obscure blocks of color and black and white photographs of naked women alongside ugly caricatures and unsubtle statements on all kinds of isms. Any one of the pieces would be worth millions to the right person, but none of it spoke to me. Or at least, most of it didn't. Sure, a lot of it was rote, exactly the kind of thing you'd expect to find hanging on the walls of someone with too much money. But every now and again, I'd find myself stopping at a painting with a cheap frame, hanging awkwardly over a bathroom door, or tucked away in one of the endless hallways, and it would seize my attention. I saw turquoise oceans with bone-colored spray, the sky a writhing pattern of fractals that hurt my eyes. Another showed a cacophony of dissected eyes and broken bones. Beside it was a tableau of poisoned men collapsing at their table as the skin sloughed from their bodies and they clutched at purple faces. One of the most beautiful showed an endless field of ice broken only by a spatter of bloody fur. I walked until just after midnight, honing in on those Baroque paintings that had been so clearly and deliberately understated. Slowly, I came to realize that they formed a kind of secret exhibition, one that threaded between all of the others. The paintings were diverse in their content, but all possessed a singular sense of taste that I knew must belong to the collector. If he'd bought the other paintings out of some pretentious need to impress, he'd at least bought these out of genuine interest. He liked them. I liked them, too. My favorite was an image of puckered lips, flushed red with matte lipstick, pressed firmly against the orifice of a cigar cutter. The tip of the woman's tongue was squeezed into the hole, and the blade was faintly visible at the corner of the rim. It hadn't drawn blood yet, but you could see how close it was to bursting through the skin. God, the rush of colors was astonishing, capturing the strange lilac complexion of veins that riddle the underside of her tongue with near photorealism. You could practically feel the pressure as a tangible excitement.
Do you know who painted these?
I turned to see Alana looking nervous, bags under her makeupless eyes. She didn't look so big out of her frocks, nor did she seem so unpleasant. She looked young, and I softened my expression and tone in order to swallow some of that ugly jealousy I felt. No, I answered. Do you? She shook her head.
They're in my dreams,
she said, chuckling nervously.
I find it hard to sleep.
Probably just the stress, always being in the center of it all, I said.
I don't mind the attention,
she replied.
I think it's this place, maybe. Have you explored much? A lot of the doors are locked off, but one of them... Do you mind checking something for me?
She relaxed a little and reached out to take my hand before hurrying along with me in tow. She reminded me of a little kid relieved to find out they're not lost and alone, and I felt some trepidation as her footfalls slowed and we came to a small door set at the end of a very long dead end.
Listen,
she whispered, before stealthily sidling up to the door and holding her breath. She gestured for me to do the same, and I did, pressing my chest against the nearby wall and leaning out so that my ear hovered over the wooden panels.
There's someone in there,
she mouthed silently. I strained to hear past the rush of blood in my ears. For a few brief seconds, the world narrowed to a fine point as I focused all my attention on that door. Quietly, so quietly I couldn't say for sure it was even there, I heard a shuffle, or perhaps a scrape, or maybe even a footstep. It was so hauntingly still. I became aware that I could hear something as subtle as the shifting of bedsheets or the turning of a body as it rotated silently on one foot. And what of me, I wondered? What of my clumsy feet, or the creaking of my bones, or the tensing of my muscles? Could they hear me? I looked back the way we came. We were deep in the spider's lair, so to speak, and I made to uncouple from the wall and begin the slow walk back. Ilana did the same. Only both of us were stopped in our tracks when a single white card slid out from beneath the door. Ilana was frozen by the sight, her eyes going so wide and her skin so pale she looked like a porcelain doll. I realized I was going to have to be the one to pick the card up. A small thing to do, I told myself, but the hairs on my hands still stood on end as my skin came closer to the gap at the bottom of the door. I felt a breeze wafting through, only it was hot and damp, like someone's breath. It smelled of rotten meat and perfume. As soon as I had the card in hand, I stood up and ran.
What's up, Foos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Your friend is unpleasant, it read. But I'm glad you liked my painting.
I didn't like any of his paintings,
Ilana said, giggling and giddy from the fright. We had both settled down on one of the many stairways that curled throughout the house.
I don't know why this person thinks I did.
I didn't have the heart to tell her that I recognized the handwriting. But then again, she had automatically assumed I was the friend. And why not? Hadn't everyone loved her? Hadn't everyone focused all their attention on her? Whoever it was, I said, they didn't like that you brought me along. Maybe next time you should go alone. She nodded in agreement. Everybody was talking the next day, except for me. Ilana had been whisked off in a sudden flurry of excitement at around 5 in the morning. People asked if I had seen her, but I always answered in the negative, my hand straying to the card in my pocket with each posing of the question. There had been a struggle, some said. Something awful had happened in the library closest to Mr. Brinshaw's bedroom. Some of the other performers even mentioned screaming. That, or they'd wormed the information out of one of the staff. Whatever had happened, it had taken place in some far-off corner of the mansion, and it resulted in an orange Coast Guard helicopter flocking to the private island where Ilana was lifted away with a face covered in bandages. With one less performer, everyone's attention soon returned to the task at hand. The artist of the day was practically in tears as she ordered us around and screamed at the costume fitters to do a week's work in an afternoon. Everything was manic, and before long, the mystery subsided, and we were all hurried out onto the stage. We were ballet dancers this time, each of us slashed with fake blood and covered with prosthetic makeup that made our faces strangely disfigured. It was stifling and awkward, and it took all my energy to focus on the strange procession we made around the stage. A slew of famous guests Mr. Brinshaw courted were paraded before us, and I'm sure I recognized one or two faces. They looked approving. For the first time since arriving, I could be seen clearly. I was not the center, of course, but at least I wasn't being deliberately hidden. I locked form, held position, and in accordance with prescribed choreography, I would occasionally change from one pose to another or act out some vague medical procedure. These displays were agonizingly slow and boring, but I suppose that was the point. A living painting was how Jensen had described it, although it wasn't quite that at all. The fact we were alive was in itself part of the brushstrokes that rendered the image whole. Us being there, uncomfortable and tired and exhausted with pins and needles prickling up our arms and legs. That was what it was really about. I was a living decoration. When it ended, I stayed behind for once. This time, no guests were to be allowed, although the performers drank a little. I managed to speak to a few people and make a few little friends here and there. One of them, a young man, was actually quite charming and clearly somewhat interested in me. By the time we shuffled out and back to our rooms, I was tipsy and happy, and all thoughts of Alana were long forgotten. At least until I reached my bed and pulled back the bed covers to reveal a bloodied cigar cutter. Beside it lay a tiny little cone of pink meat, and I realized with great horror that it was the tip of someone's tongue. Whoever had left it had included a note. "You look so good tonight," it read. "The competition should watch out." We were naked and cold. This meant that we shivered, that our skin grew pale and covered with goosebumps. Even our breath was frosty. With the money we were being paid, no one dared complain. But there was something about this display that felt particularly dehumanizing. I believe it was a commentary on homelessness, perhaps? The artist had mentioned that the room must be conditioned to the exact temperature of a New York night in December. I thought that was funny, given the guests got to wear furs and hold heated cups. If they really wanted to learn about suffering, I thought, they shouldn't do so by watching others. Still, I kept such thoughts to myself. We all did, even after the first performer collapsed. I was surprised to see a cohort of paramedics rush out from behind some curtains and begin attending to him with no fanfare. I wanted to turn my head to look. I knew a few of the others did, but neither the guests nor the staff reacted. To my right, one of the other performers began to shiver. I could see him struggling to keep it together. His chattering teeth were the loudest thing in that room. But the audience had become riveted by our struggles. The lazy procession of fur-clad women and old men with pipes slowed to a crawl, and as one they turned to face us, all faces on the quivering young man whose skin was turning blue. Eventually, he gave up. A cry of frustration rang out, and he began to walk away, only for his body to give up. He too collapsed, his head coming scarily close to the hard edge of the stage as he fell over. In my mind, I knew that meant there were 10 of us left, and I swore that the room was still getting colder. Some of the others made minor adjustments, perhaps thinking the same thing I was. This was an exhibit on endurance, or pain, or some similar thing they just hadn't told us. Still, it was all part of the show. For the life of me, I couldn't figure out why anyone would think of this, but I found myself wondering, what would it mean to be the last one standing? To be the only person up there, standing and displaying it all. Perhaps not to be admired, not by everyone, surely, but at the very least, to be acknowledged, to be seen. I like to think we all realized this at the same time. It would be another 2 hours before anyone else fell. I bet that was down to the sudden spur of determination inspired by the first two. I knew the competition had worked wonders for my endurance, and it continued to do so even as another one, then two, then three people collapsed or ran off sobbing, unable to bear another second of the freezing cold. That left six, one of which was me. The audience seemed to change members without anyone moving, or perhaps the temperature was starting to mess with my mind. By now, snot was pouring out of my nose, and at times I had to close my eyes to stop the cold from burning my irises. Sometimes one of the performers would have to adjust to wipe away the snot or to prevent a limb from giving in completely. A few even took to rubbing their arms and chests. After all, no one had spelled out any game or rules. We just decided it was up to us to hold out as long as we could. And it appeared the unspoken rule was that you only gave in if you left. But I didn't want to compromise the display. Unlike them, I remained stock still until the pain was so unbearable, I felt the edges of my vision begin to blur. I was close to giving up when I felt a flush of hot air. It was so deliriously delightful that I thought it was the onset of hypothermia. But that didn't explain the smell. God, it was awful. A stomach-churning mixture of meat and rotten fruit that made me think of buzzing flies and bloated roadkill. But it was warm. It was so warm that I found the feeling returning to my arms and then my hands and feet until even my toes and fingers were tingling with heat. An awkward glance at the other showed them shivering, and I watched as another fell into a puddle of tears and cried for help. But I was warm, even a little comfortable. The fewer of us there were, the more eyes I felt lingering on me. They were impressed, I could tell. Billionaires and oligarchs who ruled the world, and there they were, getting to see what I was made of. Far from what I'd first imagined, this wasn't some display of nubile delicacy. They had come here to see some metal, and I knew I had it in me to be the last one up there. Of course, in the end, it came down to me and me alone. The last one collapsed with a loud thunk that came from behind, and I couldn't stop the smile curving across my face. And yet, I wasn't done. This was meant to be a 6-hour display, and I knew there was another one to go. So why did the audience look at me like I was going to take a bow? A few of them were starting to look a little worse for wear. I could see that even from all the way up on stage. Their furs would only do for so long. But me? I was basking in warmth, in the hot, fetid gusts of air that blew down upon me from above, like the breath of a giant. In the end, the artist came out and announced the display was over. For the first time ever, the audience applauded one of our performances, and I knew with certainty it wasn't for anyone but me.
You know what happened to Ileana, don't you?
It was a young man speaking to me, one of the performers. I'm sure he told me his name early on. We probably even flirted. But I had been lost in my thoughts when he found me, and I could only say that he looked familiar. No. I shook my head and turned back to the painting. It showed a teenage boy floating nude in a void. His mouth opened so wide the skin began to tear. His head wrenched back like a baby bird feeding. From above, liquid gold poured down into his mouth, flowing over his lips and over his face and shoulders in shimmering rivulets. Something about the brush strokes made the gold look incredibly three-dimensional, like you could reach out and interrupt the flow with the tip of your finger.
I don't believe you,
he replied. Why not?
I don't know,
he said.
I think you know something I don't. You haven't fit in since day one. I asked a friend to look you up, and the last time you did any professional work was in 2008. Since then, it's been, what, day jobs? Retail?
It's hard for a dancer to be seen, I said. The going is good for you now, but it won't last. You know how many people graduate from a contemporary dance school and go on to have a nice, long, successful career? It's hard, and it only gets harder.
But you're here,
he replied.
And they aren't. Smells fishy. Ever since that night when they tried to freeze us to death, I've been thinking that this all feels wrong. Wouldn't surprise me if it's one big show and you're part of it.
So what do you want me to say?
I want to know the truth,
he said.
I want to know why someone like you is up there, taking center stage after a contrived series of bullshit just to what? Keep us eager? Make us that little bit extra insecure?
Why don't you see for yourself? I asked and gestured for him to follow me, leading him quietly to the door at the end of the long hallway. Lately, that door had the strangest habit of always being close at hand, but I didn't think about it much. I had no idea what exactly I was planning on doing. but he had seemed so pleased with himself and his little theory, and my agreeing had to show him something had validated all his petty jealousies. When I stopped and told him to open the door, I think he suspected something, although it was probably hard for him to say what, given that even I didn't understand my own actions.
"What's in there?"
he asked. "I think it's whoever all of this is really for." He took that as confirmation of some idea he'd been ruminating on for a while, and all hesitation left his face. He opened the door and marched in, ready to demand answers of some kind. I stayed back, my mouth dropping open at what lay within the room. For the young man, it clearly took him a few moments before the signals his eyes received actually registered somewhere in that dense head of his. I can't blame him, I suppose. It made so little sense. He shouldn't have been able to walk in there at all. It was a featureless void of distant blues and cosmic light. It felt so utterly enormous, but also somehow intimate, claustrophobic even. I found myself stepping back so that the door framed the open space, and the young man stood in the center with his feet resting on nothing at all.
"What the fuck?"
With a spine-breaking crack, his head flew backward and he began to struggle. His body lifted up gently so that his legs hung freely, and he kicked furiously in an attempt to find the door. His eyes were flickering madly from side to side, and I knew that he was looking for me, hoping that I would come to his rescue. But I was paralyzed with terror and awe and wonderful anticipation. He screamed when the gold came down, crashing over his face and eyes in a scalding mess. Up close, I realized this wasn't paint, but real molten metal. And God, it was beautiful. He thrashed and howled in agony as the very meat of his face and torso cooked in its cocoon of boiling metal, only for his limbs to seize up and his body to fall still. He was not dead. I could see that from the way he kept trying to turn and look at me. It was as if something had gripped him in an enormous fist, and just like that, his mouth was pulled open by an invisible force so strong, I heard his jaw dislocate with a stomach-churning pop. He struggled some more until finally his whole body went limp. He hung there, suspended in nothingness, as the gold continued to pour downwards in a terrible cascade. It was a perfect recreation of the painting. Even the doorway had taken on a strange golden quality, and I had realized it was a perfect replica of the painting's frame. I couldn't say if it had always been that way, or had somehow transformed before my very eyes. But I had no doubt that what I saw was real, even as the doorway seemed to shrink until it was no more than a foot across. Without quite knowing why, I reached out, and just like that, perspective bent in on itself and my fingers touched canvas. The door had disappeared, and now there was only the painting. Still, the boy hung there, rotating slowly. When I withdrew my hand, I noticed a trickle of gold running along my skin. Giggling, I licked it off and relished the chemical taste. When I looked back, the scene had frozen, and I was faced with a perfect replica of the original painting. I opened the cupboard door and was shocked to see a young woman staring at me. Her eyes were wide and she backed into the corner like a wounded animal. I recognized her immediately as one of the performers. "Good God!" I cried. "What are you doing in there?"
"Shush!"
she hissed.
"I think the others are gone."
"Don't be silly," I grumbled. "Aren't we doing a show today?" The woman looked at me like I was insane, her anxiety momentarily overridden by confusion.
"Do you even know what's out there?"
she asked.
"What's happening?"
"A house? Some paintings?"
"Have you looked at the paintings?"
she cried.
No, I won't let that happen to me."
"You should," I said. "Didn't you come out here to be part of something special?" She gave me that look again, like I was a lunatic. But before she managed to throw any mean words my way, something moved in the cupboard behind her.
"What was that?"
she snapped, her head whipping from side to side. It moved again, and I realized it was the wall behind her. I decided to calm her, but when I reached out, my hand touched something cold and hard, like a sheet of glass. Thunk. My finger probed the surface with confusion, while the woman frantically pulled the tiny space apart, looking for whatever had moved. When the wall shifted again, it finally dawned on her what was happening.
"Let me out!"
she screamed and went to shove me aside. But like me, her hands couldn't get past that invisible wall.
"What?"
she stammered.
"What the fuck?"
Her eyes alighted upon me with burning hatred.
"You!"
she screamed.
"It was you all along! I fucking knew you'd never be—"
Her words were cut off when the wall behind her touched her back. All accusations fell away as she was pushed up against the glass, and the pressure started to build. Desperately, her hands probed the invisible wall, and I noticed that her fingertips peeked out around the edges. I touched it myself and felt the gap that was no more than a millimeter wide. "I don't think you'll fit through there," I said, only for the wall behind her to come closer once more. This time it was followed by a crack or two, and the girl's eyes widened. She kept screaming, but there was another shunt from the wall behind, and all noise stopped. Not because she was dead, but just because she couldn't move her ribs and diaphragm enough to draw in any air. What was left in her lungs was used to whisper a quiet plea.
"Help. Help."
"I am," I said. The wall was relentless, and I stepped back as it pushed through her like a pneumatic press. The colors that were pressed up against that invisible surface started to bloom as her body underwent what one might call a postmodern deconstruction. Pinks and purples and yellows and browns and reds. It made me think of pre-mixed paint. I stepped back and started to appreciate the way the door framed the picture, the space that it defined. And for the first time ever, I found the image lacking. But then she started to leak through the gaps in the sides. Oh, that was a delight, like Play-Doh squeezed through a toy. She flowed out of all four edges of the frame and out toward me like a curling wave of ever-thinning material. It hit the floor and began to fold over itself, and I stepped away to let it pile up. "Much better," I said. "A far more interesting piece." Near my foot, I heard a peep and saw a piece of her looking up at me. Poor thing. She was still so afraid. She was still trying to move. "Art can be transformative," I said, reaching down to stroke her. From above, a hot gust of wind blew across me, stinking hard of rot and meat. I could tell that he agreed. There were multiple paintings on the wall of my room. They all looked so very familiar. The people up there swanning around. That's if they were even people at all. Some of those photos showed bits of people, or their insides. I admired the collection. It wasn't Mr. Brinshaw's. It was mine. I had a card that said as much. It was a shame there were so few performers left. I would have appreciated the chance to show it all off. One of the paintings was sweating. I took a cloth and wiped it down, carefully trying to avoid damaging the precious canvas. It was fast becoming one of my favorites. I leaned forward and blew on it, giggling as its hair rose on end. "You are beautiful," I whispered. It moaned.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I stepped back and looked at the others. It occurred to me there would be another show soon, and I decided to go see if anyone was ever going to come get me. At this stage, they really couldn't afford to forget. The whole thing was riding on my shoulders. "Hello?" I cried, poking my head out of the door, but no one answered. I kept on looking and shouting, but the whole place was deserted. No staff, no butlers or chefs or maids or aides or secretaries or makeup artists or anyone. On a whim, I made my way toward Mr. Brinshaw's wing, thinking that he'd be able to sort this all out. And if he was to open it, I'm sure he'd like to see my own private collection. I really was quite keen to show it off. I found him in his bedroom. It was a gorgeous four-poster frame made of stunning hardwood oak, the color so rich it resembled opal. His companions were very attractive as well. No one could ever say Mr. Brinshaw had bad taste. I just wished I hadn't stepped in him when first entering the room. But the light was off, and he was just everywhere. The women were also in a bit of a state. Still, the room was full of giggles and cheers, and I just had to accept that Mr. Brinshaw was occupied for the time being. I left and went looking for Jensen. He was hanging in the atrium, his wrist clearly slit using a letter opener that lay on the floor. He had written a note that was kept in his pocket, and I took it, just knowing it had been meant for me. It was pretty hard to read, what with the bloody thumbprints and the messy handwriting, but I managed to make some of it out. In our wildest dreams did we expect this to happen. I won't lie to you and say that we had the best of intentions, but never this, Catherine. By now, you must be the last one left, and surely wondering what all of this was about. The summoning. I threw the note aside with a cocked eyebrow. Me? I grumbled. This was always about me? I gave Jensen a playful little shove that sent him swinging. Silly goose, I said before walking away. I was at the door when the rope snapped, and his body hit the marble floor with a bone-crunching thud. I like you. The card fluttered down from the darkness overhead and it landed in my hair. It was always dark up there lately, like it followed me from room to room. Although I didn't move much anymore, it had been a good few weeks since the last show. I like you too, I said. I see you. The card landed in my lap. The words sent a warm, fuzzy feeling rushing up to my stomach, and I reached out and held it close to my chest. Thank you. I have enjoyed my time here. Me too. They are coming. Oh, let them, I said. They were always going to come. I must go, but we need the final painting. A part of me wanted to cry, but I also knew this had been coming. After this, I wouldn't be seen by anyone the same way he had seen me. I know, I said. You are always going to be the best of them all. A knife fell from darkness above and landed beside me, blade first. It stuck in the wooden floor and the handle quivered from side to side. Without thinking, I grabbed it and looked down at my legs. In the distance, I could hear a helicopter. I started cutting. I refused to go into detail for them. It was a ridiculous request to tell them what happened, and it didn't matter how many angry people asked. Maybe if they'd appreciated the exhibit, but I could tell they were disgusted by the collection. I had inspired an unrivaled creativity in him, and he had run rampant, making and twisting and reshaping, and some of the things they found sobbing in that house were truly beautiful. A few even slipped away into the ocean, but I haven't told. They put me in this place, and he's gone. Well, sometimes I feel that breath on my shoulders. He keeps an eye on me when he can, I'm sure of it. One of the other people here, a poor old man without any hair, and who always talked to himself, asked what happened. And so I told him that I had shone like a light, wanting to be seen and admired, and something had taken up the call. I told him that if he wants to be seen badly enough and casts his thoughts out far and wide enough, he can be seen too. It was then that the space above me darkened and he cast his eyes up, and that was when the screaming started. Now, they don't let me out of the room, but the staff always gives me what I want. A laptop, the Wi-Fi password, cigarettes, even some art supplies. They must think I'm dangerous and don't want to get on my bad side. Such a silly thing to think. It wasn't me who blinded that old man. He did it to himself. But I thought he should know. And you should, too. If you want to be seen, and I mean you want it really badly, you might actually attract his attention.
That was A Private Exhibition, written by Christian Wallace, performed by Beth Gaito, and featuring stellar performances from Otis Gyrie, Katie Otten, Kyle Barbary, and former Evil Idol contestant Miles Catania. Joining us again after a hiatus. Welcome back, Miles. In a world where fame is fleeting and beauty is a currency, Wallace paints a picture of ambition taken to its most grotesque extreme. The hunger to be noticed, to stand out, to matter, becomes a summoning. And the price of being seen isn't just pain, it's transformation. Christian Wallace has once again reminded us that horror is most potent when it speaks to what we want and dares to give it to us. And speaking of Mr. Wallace, if you enjoyed tonight's tale, you'll want to sink your teeth into his latest release from our friends at Velox Books. More Teeth, Stories of Horror and the Supernatural with Bite. This terrifying collection features short stories, both beloved and brand new, from the mind that brought you A Private Exhibition. Christian Wallace, whose chilling fiction is spoken of in hushed tones across Reddit's No Sleep, invites you into a world where the unseen has teeth. Inside, you'll find a family fun center with a bottomless pit that warps reality. A mysterious painting job in the desert that opens a portal to something inhuman. A couple's night out, overtaken by soulless dolls and a vanishing crowd. And a black site where forbidden knowledge blurs the line between science and blasphemy. These stories and others will bite, and they'll leave a scar you'll never forget. More Teeth is available now at Amazon.com, with a paperback starting at just $17.95, or head to VeloxBooks.com, that's Velox, V-E-L-O-X, Books.com, for more info and other dark offerings. We've dropped the link in our YouTube video description. And as for the man behind the curtain, Christian Wallace is a PhD student and writer from rain-soaked Wales, raised among ancient castles, crumbling coastlines, and the old things that live in the woods. Trust us, you're going to want more. If tonight's story made you question the walls around you, or wonder what your reflection sees when you aren't looking, you know what to do. Support Chilling Tales for Dark Nights by leaving a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. Watching on YouTube? Tap that like button, leave a comment, and subscribe for fresh horror every week. For even darker delights, become a patron at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com. For just $7.99 a month or even less with our annual plan, you'll get ad-free episodes, early releases, and stories too twisted to tell just anywhere. Follow us on social media for narrator features, creepy content, and a backstage pass to all things spine-chilling. I'm your host, Steve Taylor. And as always, thank you for spending your shadows with us. Until next time, turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listeners. Sweet dreams.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.